I brought a few other stories with me, if you're interested, about Shechin Kontrol. We don't have a lot of information about him, actually, but Tuku Ujin Rinpoche told a lot of stories that have been collected into his memoirs. Maybe you've seen the book called Blazing Splendor. If you don't know this book, you should. This is an amazing book. And there are some stories in there about Shechin Kontrol. Tuku Ujin did tell more stories than the editor deemed appropriate to put in the book. And I hope someday to get more of these from the translator, Eric Schmidt. But I have a few from him from a long time ago when they were first being transcribed. So I thought, if you don't mind, I'll read a little bit from this. As well, I'm going to read a little bit from the Blazing Splendor just to kind of tie it together for you. So just to have a sense of who's who, because a few people get mentioned here by name that'll be confusing, we know Jam Kontrol the Great lived, and when he passed away was apparently 25 emanations were said to have arisen after he died, five of whom were recognized, and the other 20 were not. But there were five emanations of Jam Kontrol the Great that were identified, and Shechin Kontrol is one of them. From, obviously, Shechin Monastery, which is where Jam Kontrol the Great kind of first went. He had first been trained by his uncle, who was a Bunpo, and then after that period, he went to Shechin and began his studies. But he was later recognized as a tuku that belonged to Pepung Monastery, Situ Rinpoche's monastery, which is very near Shechin, relatively. And because he was kind of named to be a tuku of a different monastery, that monastery can lay claim over you. And they did. And so he moved from Shechin to Pepung. Jam Kontrol the Great writes about this in his autobiography, and not very positively in some sense. This is part of the tuku politics world. But at any rate, he kind of started his Buddhist career at Shechin, and I guess it's fitting that he also wound up there again in one of his second emanations. The head of Shechin Monastery is Robjam Rinpoche. So maybe you've met the current Robjam Rinpoche, is Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche's grandson. So he's the abbot of Shechin. And then there's another very important tuku at Shechin known as Shechin Gyaltsup, literally the regent of Shechin, but that's kind of his tuku name, Shechin Gyaltsup. And Shechin Gyaltsup was the main student of Mipham, a very great Nyingma teacher you know about, maybe, who was not at Shechin particularly. He might have visited there, but he wasn't resident there. But his main student was this tuku from Shechin known as Shechin Gyaltsup. Shechin Gyaltsup is the one who was responsible for identifying Shechin Kontrol as the tuku of the great Kontrol. So that's why I mention all this. So these are stories that come to us from Tuku Ujin. So an emanation of Jam Kontrol the Great was identified to be Shechin Kontrol, recognized, in fact, by Shechin Gyaltsup. He saw in his pure vision that this particular boy over there is beyond any doubt an emanation of Kontrol Lodro Taye. So he took hold of the boy, and he put his younger brother, the younger brother of Shechin Gyaltsup, was put in charge to be his tutor and kind of servant of Shechin Kontrol. I believe Tuku Ujin heard most of these stories from that attendant, the younger brother of Shechin Gyaltsup, who was the attendant. The attendant said that whenever the small boy was sort of alone by himself, there was always a crow that was kind of covering him, sitting on top of him and covering the little baby with its wing. As soon as somebody would enter the room, they would see the crow flying out of the window. And when nobody was there, the crow would come right back and spread its wings over the baby to protect it. Many people saw that, and the protector, according to the story, is regarded as an actual Dharma protector, known as Charok. As Shechen Khontrul grew up, he became incredibly learned and developed perfect meditation experience and realization. In short, his life story is incredible. Okay. So the old servant told me, to Gujan, actually, Shechen Khontrul, he's a very strange lama. When you look at him, he looks like a beggar, but he's actually a very special teacher, and so you should go and get instruction from him. I asked him, why is he strange? In what way is he strange? The servant said, well, for example, one day Khontrul Rinpoche went to see the famous scholar and practitioner Ku Jamyang Trakpa, who was a student of both the great Kensei and the great Khontrul. The road was very bad that he was traveling on, and as they were traveling one day, he slid off the road and wound up sliding down a ridge. It was actually a rock ridge that he was sliding down. While he was sliding, his heels left a very clear imprint, a sliding imprint within the rock. All of us students said, oh, Rinpoche, you left footprints here. Khontrul Rinpoche replied, you people are trying to make a fool out of me. When somebody's sliding down a ridge, how can there be any footprints when sliding down? He never liked any kind of special attention being paid to him. But apparently the servant said that those imprints in the rock are still visible. Then they continued on their way, and at one point, Khontrul Rinpoche was taking an afternoon nap in one of the monasteries that they were visiting on their route. While he was napping, the hill on the opposite to the monastery caught fire. It was quite a large hill, and it was just roaring in flames. The students were thinking, well, if we go to Rinpoche and wake him up and interrupt his sleep, maybe that will be very bad, because Khontrul Rinpoche is somebody who has control over life and death, and he might just leave his body. So maybe it's not a good idea for us to wake him up. But the fire was getting worse and worse, and the students were getting very worried about the whole situation. So they finally decided to wake him up. So they sort of nudged him and said, Rinpoche, please don't sleep. The hill on the opposite side has caught fire, and the fire is proceeding towards the monastery. So at that moment, Khontrul Rinpoche got up. He looked out of the window and said, it says here, my God. I can just picture him saying that. My God, there's such a big fire in that place. But in the hell realm, the fire is 7 times stronger than this fire. What unbelievable sufferings must the hell beings endure? Then Khontrul Rinpoche clapped his hands 2 times together, and at the very instant, the fire completely went out. That is the kind of lama Shechen Khontrul is. Khontrul Rinpoche was always wearing very old clothing, and it was completely filled with lice. As soon as the lice would come out of his dress, he would just put them back into the dress. I said to Shechen Khontrul, this is probably the servant talking, don't put those lice back into your clothes. They will just increase in number. Give your dress to me, and I'll get rid of the flies and the lice. Khontrul Rinpoche said, I only have this one dress. One day, the servant went to see Karmapa. This would be the 16th Karmapa. And the Karmapa asked me, what is Khontrul Rinpoche doing? I said, he is all the time putting the lice back into his dress. Karmapa said, why does he do this? I answered, oh, he has very strong compassion with the flies and with the lice. He thinks that when they slip out of his dress, they'll die. He doesn't want to get rid of them. He always keeps them inside of his dress. One day, the Karmapa sent down from his own wardrobe very precious old silk Chinese brocades and silk garments. You know, a kind of undergarment, silk shirt, and so on. A complete lama outfit from the Karmapa's own wardrobe. Khonta Rinpoche said, "I will never wear Karmapa's clothes. That's impossible." Then the Karmapa said, "Just dress him." So they stripped him naked and completely undressed him. Shechen Gyaltsap's younger brother just took all the clothes off of him. And Shechen Khontral said, "I am now really in trouble. My whole life I've never worn any kind of brocade. Now I'm sitting here with this precious brocade, and all the time I'm saying, I've got to ruin it. It's got to be ruined when I wear it. So I cannot stand this. I can't sit in this kind of dress. I'm really in trouble now." I said, "What's so difficult about wearing a cloth? Don't think like that." So in the end, he had to wear them because the Karmapa got the servants to take the clothes away to sort of fumigate them with dutsi, amrita, and mendrup, and that he refused to give back the old clothing. The Karmapa kept them. And the Karmapa gave us a very special instruction. He said, "Don't give him back his old clothing, because he'll just take the lice and put them into his new brocade dress." So finally I was able to change Shechen Khontral's mind. I told him, "What is the problem with the brocade? Your own body is an infinite mandala of the victorious ones, so just offer the brocade dress to the victorious ones in your body mandala." And he agreed finally. He said, yeah. I know. Tuku Ujin tells this story so this is now Tuku Ujin talking. "As I was preparing to leave Tibet, a wonderful master named Shechen Khontral gave me a letter to deliver to Dzongsar Khyentse." This is Dzongsar Khyentse Chuki Lodro, the first Dzongsar Khyentse, who was already in Sikkim. So this would have been 1958, roughly. Handing me the letter, he said, so this is Shechen Khontral, he says to Tuku Ujin, "These days it is definitely justifiable to say that Dzongsar Khyentse is old Khyentse in person," meaning the great Khyentse. "Nowadays it seems very easy for people to meet him down in Gangtok, which is actually quite incredible. Please take this letter to him." It was extremely unusual for this master, Shechen Khontral, to offer such praise about anyone. But when I later gave Dzongsar Khyentse the letter, he put it on his head and he said, "This is from someone who is like old Khontral in person. It may seem as though it was very easy for you to meet him, but it is amazing good fortune." They had this remarkable mutual admiration for and pure perception of each other. Shechen Khontral had reached the collapse of delusion. Noble beings at this level very often act in a totally spontaneous way, like children, without any second thoughts regarding social conventions. And that is how Shechen Khontral seemed during the last years of his life. Shechen Khontral, with Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, went on a pilgrimage from Kham, where they lived, to Lhasa. And Lama Yunten, one of Trungpa Rinpoche's attendants, went with them. I think he was the attendant for Shechen Khontral. So Yunten was from Samang, and they went, at least the three of them, I'm sure there were few other people, that went on a long pilgrimage to Lhasa, towards the end of the 1950s. So this story comes from that period of time. So again, Tuku Ujin is telling this story. Another story that I remember was once Shechen Khontral was asked by the Tibetan minister named Nabu to do a puja in the Jokhang temple in Lhasa. Nabu, who was, I believe, the head of the Tibetan army at the time, wanted to make some special offerings in the Jokhang, and so he invited three teachers to come and make the puja there. One is a lama from Mindro Ling, and I am not sure which one this is. In Blazing Splendor, it says Chung Rinpoche, Mindro Ling Chung Rinpoche, and probably that's the correct one. But it might have been Mindro Ling Chen Rinpoche, big and little. Mindro Ling Chen Rinpoche is Khandra Rinpoche's father. Chung Rinpoche is another lama, important lama at Mindro Ling. So one of the two of them were asked to, you think, so it's Chung, it's not her father. Okay, all right, so Mindro Ling Chung Rinpoche was the kind of hierarchically highest of the three of them. So he sat kind of like in the prime spot. And next to him was Dilgo Khyentse. And next to Dilgo Khyentse was Shechen Khontrol. So the three of them are together doing this kind of puja. Now the minister of the government, Nabu, he's kind of a big shot. So he doesn't even come to the ceremony. That's kind of, you know, doesn't need to do that. He sends his wife to participate in the ceremony and to make the offerings to the lamas for doing the puja. So in the Jokhang, there are many, many different kind of areas there, a lot of different shrine rooms and so forth. And this is somewhere between the outer and inner section of a statue of Maitreya, which is where they're doing the puja. So after the puja is finished, the wife of the minister presents herself to Minling Chung Rinpoche, and because she's a big deal, she's a high-level aristocrat, she doesn't prostrate to him. Instead, she kind of bows, and they touch their foreheads to each other, which is, you know, a sign of respect to each other. And they do that, and then she hands him, like, an envelope of some money and offering for doing the puja. So while she's doing that, Khontrol Rinpoche, Shechen Khontrol, he sees what's going on here, and he kind of tugs Dilgo Khyentse's arm, and kind of says, he sees like, oh, am I going to have to touch her forehead? Now, he's saying this out loud, so everybody in the area hears what he's saying. So he kind of says like, hey, Khyentse, am I going to have to touch her forehead like this? I have never touched the head of a woman in my life. You know, he's a good monk. He's never touched the hand of a woman, let alone forehead. Khyentse is very embarrassed that Khontrol is saying this out loud and just kind of looks at him like, yes, touch your forehead. Like, shut up and just do it. So, you know, while he's saying that, the woman's prostrating to Dilgo Khyentse. They touch their foreheads and she gives him his offering. And then she's now prostrating to Shechen Khontrol, or bowing to him, and he touches her forehead, and she gives him his offering. And immediately, Shechen Khontrol opens it up and starts counting the cash. And then he says in front of her, says, hey, Khyentse, how much did you get? She gave me blah, blah, whatever it was. So that's the way it played out. Khyentse Rinpoche said, it is really embarrassing. You cannot be seen in public with Shechen Khontrol. His deluded perception has completely collapsed. And this story apparently was told to Tuku Ujin by Dilgo Khyentse. So that's our guru's guru.